This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Bailyn Spector will join us coming up in about a half an hour. We look forward to that conversation. But Wes, we kind of hinted on it a little bit. There are some banged up quarterbacks as we approach the halfway point of this crazy upside down 2020 football year.
Yeah, it's kind of become glaring at a couple spots. And obviously last week you had two starters, Brennan Armstrong at Virginia and Kenny Pickett at Pittsburgh, who did not even make trips with their respective teams to those games. And obviously Joey Yellen gets handed the ball against Miami, and Lindell Stone and a combination of Keaton Thompson and Ira Armstead for Virginia in the ball game at Winston-Salem against Wake Forest. Then on Saturday, Devin Leary goes down and Bailey Hockman has to come in, and now looks like he might actually finish the regular season. Tommy DeVito did not play last week. He's probably out for the remainder of the regular season potentially. Rex Culpepper takes over for Syracuse. Well, let's start looking at some of these differences in some of these guys and what the impact means to the team. For instance, Virginia uses three guys to compensate for what one does with Armstrong. But in the case of Pittsburgh, and we'll start with the Panthers here, Mark, because Kenny Pickett, you know, and the term gets thrown around a lot as a game manager, right? But Kenny Pickett was the epitome of a veteran guy in this league. And on comes Joey Yellen. Hey, look, his QBR wasn't great. He threw a touchdown. He was under 50%. You know, what is it about Joey Yellen and what will it do to impact? Well, we already talked about Pittsburgh with Kenny Pickett struggling to run the ball. Now, is that emphasized even more? I mean, to me, it's the way the Panthers have to deal with now. The defense has got to take another step up, and the run game has got to get something going to help Joey Yellen.
Well, I mean, do you think that Pittsburgh, who's not been able to run the ball on anybody, do you think they're going to run on Notre Dame? I don't. Not based on not the sample size I've seen this year, watching Notre Dame's defense. Right. And, I mean, hey, listen, the Irish last week, did they struggle in the game? They did. But you know what? Louisville scored 7 points. Notre Dame's defense is no joke now. They will hit you. They will tackle you. They got dudes on every level. So if you're Pittsburgh, I guarantee you Pat Narduzzi's watched the film over and over and over. We've talked about this all year with the Panthers. You've got to be able to run the ball better. They did not do it very well against Miami, and they've got a good defensive front too. So you got to figure, Wes, if you're going to do anything against Notre Dame with the football, you're going to have to do it through the air. And Kenny Pickett gives you your best chance. Now, I'm not telling you that Yellen can't make plays. He was okay against Miami. But Kenny Pickett's your guy now. They got to figure out a way to get him healthy ASAP. And, again, we don't know what the status is. Pat Narduzzi playing pretty close to the vest. He did last week because we thought he would play, and he didn't. He was not necessarily right. Telling you exactly what he was going to do in his press conferences this week either. So if Yellen gets the nod, hey, you got to go with what you got. But Kenny Pickett is really desperately needed for Pitt this week, trying to at least attack Notre Dame through the air.
Well, and to that degree, let's move on to Syracuse, where Tommy DeVito could be lost for the entire regular season. And now you're looking at Rex Culpepper, who is a marvelous story as a person. But Culpepper comes in last week and against Liberty, you know, he threw a couple touchdowns, got some things going there early in the ball game. But Mark, in some ways, lack of reps. And again, I think a lot of Syracuse's situation is not a singular position as much as it is collective with injuries and other things. And here's the aspect about this that I think, you know, may have been overlooked a little bit. The install of Syracuse's new offense and new defense, although Sterling Gilbert is probably a function of the Dino Babers tree, the install of all of that, Mark, has come before they got back together through Zoom. I mean, you wonder how many reps truly Syracuse has had in comparison to what normal would be, right? And some of that may be here. I saw some throws that were there last week. That's a good one to Quealy, Anthony Quealy, for the touchdown. There's some that were there last week. There are others that weren't. And this is just a function of a struggle in some respects. I don't think it's all tied to one position here for sure.
I agree. I mean, like I said, they've had 15 either starters or major contributors that are out. It's already been a goofy year with no spring, no summer. You mentioned all the Zoom calls and all that stuff. And let's be honest, too, Syracuse got off to a tough start in terms of, hey, can we get started in the fall? We had, remember, they kind of their practice sessions were delayed. There were a lot of questions about testing operatives around the country. Players were holding out from that perspective. So, I mean, it's been a combination of a lot of things at Syracuse. And it's one thing to say, hey, we're doing this new install, but you've also got to have some confidence. And Syracuse, to me, has always been a team with Dino when his teams were good, and they just had a swagger about them offensively that they figured that, hey, we're going to spread it out. We're going to throw this thing all over the yard, and you're going to have to go defend it. And we have supreme confidence in what we do. You know, when you watch them play now, given all the starts and stops and injuries, that's the last thing you think of when you watch Syracuse offensively right now. It just seems like everything is hard, right? And there's just no continuity. Right. There's no swagger. There's no confidence. And when you like to play 100 miles an hour and all of a sudden you can't get the car out of the garage, there are long weekends. And, I mean, so it's a combination, like you said, Wes, of everything right now at Syracuse. And I don't suspect that what they are going to face on Saturday is going to help the confidence level. But we'll see. You know, you never know. Maybe getting away from Syracuse will be helpful, playing in front of people. Knowing you got nothing to lose, hey, we're going down there with, I mean, we're going to play the number one ranked team. They watched film this week of a team that won 73-7, and you're thinking, hey, you know what? Let's just go down there and play loose, have fun. Nobody expects us to win or compete. Maybe in some respects, that will be a burden that's lifted, where they can just go and relax and play. And if you get beat by 50, right, hey, you get beat by 50, but let's go do our thing. So I hope they can turn it around. Again, you and I are big Dino Babers fans. We like him personally, yep. And I know the last year and a half has been really, really difficult, but the guy can coach. He's proven that before, but they're just having one of those years where they just simply cannot stay healthy.
Yeah, let's move on to another campus where they're kind of waiting on the starter to get back, and maybe it will be Saturday night at Miami, and that's at Virginia, where Brennan Armstrong went down late first half of the NC State ball game, replaced by Lindell Stone. And since then, Stone's done a nice job of slinging it around. But last week, Virginia went with three options at quarterback. Stone started the ball game, fine. But then you had Keaton Thompson and Ira Armstead, Mississippi State transfer in Thompson, the young freshman from South Bend, Indiana, and Armstead, come in to provide some of the QB run stuff that was being done under, obviously, Bryce Perkins a year ago, but certainly Brennan Armstrong at the beginning of this year. Mark, this is as much on the scout for the defense as it's going to be on what Virginia elects to do. I thought Robert and I and the offensive staff last week came up with some interesting stuff to try and get at least Virginia in the best possible scenarios. They even played Thompson and Armstead together on a snap. They played Stone with both kids on a snap. I mean, if they have to keep doing this, if Armstrong's not able to bounce back and play Saturday night in Miami, then you know what? This is a three-guy option, but it's clearly the best option Virginia has right now.
Bronco Mendenhall taking a page of the Mark Packer coaching book this week at his press conference. Quote, no decision has been made on Armstrong's availability. Now, he's going through the protocol, and as Bronco pointed out in the press conference, hey, I don't know. It's, you know, it's beyond my control. The medical folks will let him know if he's good to go whenever it's time to give you the green light. So, Bronco, again, I don't think he's playing games here, but he's just being honest and transparent. He doesn't know his availability. So, if you're Miami, you certainly have enough tape to watch all those crazy-looking numbers at 36, 98, and 99 at QB and go, all right, we got to plan accordingly. And if Armstrong plays, Miami's kind of got to be ready for that too. So from that perspective,
right,
Virginia really needs a win too. Another one of these teams in kind of that downward streak, losing three straight. Miami feels good about the no hangover effect from Clemson as they beat Pitt last week. So they're still looking about, hey, we went out, we're getting to Charlotte to go play Clemson again, maybe, perhaps. So they know what's at stake here. So Virginia, again, much like a lot of teams in the league, have to find a way to get healthy and snap this streak. This is a really big, big week for Bronco and his guys.
Let's move to Raleigh. We touched on this in the last segment. Devin Leary's leg injury has put Bailey Hockman back on that stage as the Wolfpack starting quarterback. And Leary expected to miss up to 2 months here with the broken fibula. It brings Hockman back kind of full circle, if you will. Started the Wake ball game. Leary wasn't available. Mark, I thought you mentioned yesterday he's got some true game experience. I mean, to bring a team from behind to win, as he did on opening night against the Deacons, says something about his makeup. Now, how will he treat this differently? Because it wasn't all wine and roses for Bailey Hockman. There were some interceptions. There was some struggle in Blacksburg against the Hokies, who came out firing that night as well. You see a pick six to Jasir Taylor here. For Bailey Hockman, I got to believe he's learned a lot just in this season about how maybe to handle this next moment.
Totally agree. I will also go back to what happened to this team a year ago. So many young guys got a chance to play. It wasn't pretty. NC State fans are totally bummed out. I get it. But now, all of a sudden, that pays dividends. More guys with experience when, hey, we're going to go play and this counts. This possession, this is not practice. This one counts. So I think that helps from that perspective. Mm-hmm. And let's also be honest here too, Wes. Dave Doran. Go Pack. I got the syrup behind me right there. Dave Doran rolls into Chapel Hill, and it has been home sweet home for NC State under Dave Doran. They go over there to beautiful Keenan Stadium, and it's just like, man, why don't you guys roll out a red carpet for us? Because NC State has feasted off North Carolina in Chapel Hill. Dave Doran, you can't beat him in Chapel Hill. Just look up the numbers. So you got a ranked versus ranked. We've got four ranked versus ranked games in the country this weekend. This is one of them. Number 23, NC State. Number 14, North Carolina. There is a lot at stake in not only Tobacco Road rivalry. NC State's trying to win the state championship. They've beaten Duke. They've beaten Wake. Dave Doran is perfect at Keenan Stadium. Red and white of NC State. Carolina Blue, they don't like each other. They never have liked each other. They don't even pretend to like each other. So there is a lot riding on this bad boy Saturday. This is going to be a fun, fun football game.
Yep, yep. Carolina off the tough loss at Florida State. Wolfpack come in off the win against Duke. You'll get your full entertainment dollar at noon, by the way.
No doubt.
On ESPN. The other quarterback status, it's not Trevor Lawrence now at Clemson. Trevor's fine. But the backup scenario with Tyson Pumichon taking a hand injury over the weekend at Georgia Tech, DJ Uiagalelei being sore with the arm fatigue, if you will, now all of a sudden – maybe it's not a stretch for Hunter Helms and Will Spires.
Something tells me that the running back room is going to be very, very busy Saturday. I mean, I know we're spending time on the quarterbacks here in this segment, but given what Syracuse has not been able to do here the last couple of weeks, given over 700 yards rushing in their last two games, Travis Etienne on the doorstep of beating the all-time record that Ted Brown's had for a long, long time. Something tells me that balls in the air won't necessarily be as big a deal as the Clemson run game Saturday. That game Saturday, Wes, that you got, that thing could be over early. Just telling you, that clock could be going fast, brother, because I think there's going to be a lot of run touchdown in Clemson Saturday.
Yeah. Interesting scenario. We'll see who, how the backup QB situation, although I'm sure there'd be some people in burnt orange and Northwestern purple excited to see DJ sling it around a little bit on Saturday if they could, right?
Well, you'll get some of that. But I think for the most part, given Syracuse's inability to tackle anybody here the last 2 weeks running the ball, and I think the fact that as crazy as Clemson's win was against Georgia Tech, to be honest, Travis Etienne was really quiet Saturday. I mean, he fumbled early.
Yep.
Just seemed like, you know, it just the game never got to him, right? Normally the game comes to number nine. Yep. Something tells me that nine is going to get some serious love on Saturday.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Phelan Spector, linebacker at Clemson, part of the Bruise Brothers, going to join us here in about 15 minutes or so. Wes, yesterday we had Kyren Williams on, the outstanding running back, one of many that Brian Kelly has in South Bend. And we asked him point blank that I know they were bummed out, only scoring 12 against the Cardinals, but they won the game. But more importantly, when it mattered, 7 minutes, 55 seconds on the clock, Notre Dame's got a 5-point lead in the ball. They absolutely milked every second. Third down conversions, ran the ball. Asked him point blank, can't be a better feeling than that as a running back.
Yeah, it's really big when Coach Kelly trusts in the O-line and the running back to run the ball on third down and seven to get that first down to steal the game. But we knew as an offense that with that 7 minutes and 55 seconds left on the drive that we had to put the team on our back and we had to finish this out. We knew that we struggled sometimes getting in the end zone, so we knew that, you know, we had to do what we had to do to get a win.
Well, by the way, before the season started, we knew there was going to be a great stable of backs at Notre Dame. We knew that your offensive line was going to be really, really good. We knew Ian Book with all the experience at quarterback. What do we not know about this team? What was you guys in the locker room kicking things around? You're undefeated, ranked third in the country, tough game coming up against Pitt. What's the one thing about this team, Kyren, that we don't know about yet?
I mean, there's still a lot of things that we guys have, like the world doesn't know about this team yet. We talk about every day that our capacity is a ceiling. And we know that if we keep working and we keep becoming better as an offense and chemistry, that we can really excel in all levels. We can throw the ball deep. We can throw the ball short. We can run the ball long. We can run the ball short. So we know that once we just come together as an offense that and we dial in on all cylinders, that it's going to be hard to stop. And we know that's coming soon when we just keep working every day to get there.
Kyren, when you guys line up to go against a team like Pittsburgh on Saturday, obviously their defensive front is the one thing that is kind of the staple of their program, right? And even though they've had some struggles here the last few weeks, as you start diving into the Panthers in your preparation this week, is there anything in particular you see there that you haven't seen yet?
I mean, yeah, as you talked about the front four, I mean, that's a big challenge that poses us for the run game. We know that Pitt's only allowing 61 rushing yards a game. So we know coming in as offense, we got a challenge ahead of us. We got a good defense in Pitt, and we're just ready to accept that challenge and then go to Pittsburgh and play a real good game.
You guys have been at home for so long. It's going to probably feel good just to get out of town, isn't it? Just for once?
Yeah, it feels good just to be able to play in those white uniforms instead of those blue, you know, just seeing a different color.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, and listen, I know you love playing at home, and I know it's been weird too, right? When you went again, Notre Dame, it's always sold out. You can't get a ticket. But what has it been like that first month when you come through the tunnel knowing that basically 20 to 25% capacity, it's got to be a little different.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a little different. Even coming out of the tunnel, we don't even see smoke anymore. So, but we know that, like, the fans, it doesn't determine what we do on offense or what we do as a team. We know that no matter who is in the stands, that we always got to execute to the fullest level. So we appreciate the fans that we do have. We hear them. We love them for being there and cheering us on every game. So, but we know that no matter what the situation is with the fans, that we got to play football regardless.
Kyren, this has all been kind of a moving target for everybody, right? I mean, you know, college football has had to go through hoops, countless hoops to just even get it on the tee to start the season. And now once the season has begun, you know, there's always been pause and change and things like that. You guys have gone through it. Several schools have. From a player perspective, combining all the elements we talk about when we get to college football, what's that been like?
I mean, it's been confusing, you know, just waking up every day not knowing if we could play practice or we could not practice. You know, we had that 1 week that we shut down. And it was just like one day we woke up and we just didn't have a lift and we didn't have practice. So, you know, it's always surprising. You know, it's never comfortable now with college football because you never know when the season could end or when it could be paused or anything. So, you know, we're just taking every day, each day, and we'll be grateful for coming out every day and playing the game we love.
You know, in years past, hey, you're playing SC, you're playing Stanford, you're playing a Big Ten team, you go on the East Coast, West Coast. Now you're in a conference. Has the conversation in the locker room been different because there is a prize at the end of this regular season, if everything falls into place and you could go play for a conference championship, how much dialogue, how often you guys talk about that, that, hey, you know, when you play Louisville, hey, this is a conference game. It's not just a regular everyday Saturday. How different has that been?
It's been sort of different, you know, just coming in every week, knowing kind of sort of what your opponent is like, you know, being in a conference, you know what the ACC teams are like, but you know, without being in the conference last year, we were just, it was that unexpected, you know, just getting different teams every week. But in the locker room, we know that we are fighting, we are playing every day for the ACC championship. And, you know, just being there for our first year in ACC and going there, it would be a dream come true for the whole team. And we know that every day that we are, that is the end goal, is to be in the ACC and then to advance to the national championship. So we know that we just got to keep working as a team to get there.
Cameron, when you guys have practice, and I love Hamilton. Hamilton's one of my favorite players in the country. When it's one versus one in practice at Notre Dame, and you get this great offensive line, you're sitting back there going, okay, all right, they're talking, you're talking, here we go. What's that like, especially with Hamilton? Because I love 14, man. 14 will hit you. What is a practice like when it's, all right, it's serious business now, ones versus ones? Because I got to imagine from a physical standpoint, that's what college football is all about.
Yeah. So in fall camp, we do a lot of just one-on-one situations, like in our run PAP, our periods are just one-on-ones in general. And, you know, there's always, it's competitive, you know, you got to come with it, even though it's practice. You know, like you said, Kyle's coming down every play trying to knock my head off. So I know that as a running back, and then, you know, we're trying to get each other better. So if when I see Kyle, then I'm going to give him a move or just do what I do, and I know that he's going to do the same for me. So as a defense and as an offense, when we go together, we know what it is. We know we got to turn the juice up and get the energy up because it's going to be fun and competitive, and we're going to ultimately at the end get each other better.
Kyron Williams, sharp kid, obviously. Really good back and a great, great offensive line. And that leads to a tremendous matchup Saturday, Wes. Pittsburgh's defensive front, salty, best in the country stopping the run. Notre Dame, nasty. Filthy offensive line, backs, experienced quarterback. I mean, that is, you know, again, talking about ones versus ones. When Notre Dame's got the ball and Pitt's playing defense, grab your popcorn because it is go time.
Well, it's also the scenario we were touching on earlier, right? Remember, like Monday or Tuesday, we were talking about Ian Book's ability to throw the ball vertically. We talked about that with Tom Luganville yesterday in his segment with us. And then here a moment ago, we were talking about Pitt and the ability just to run it. If it's Joey Yellen or Kenny Pickett or whatever the case may be at quarterback, you know, the intricacies of what the other side of the ball becomes are often fascinating. I remember having this discussion the week of Pitt and Louisville, right, where we're talking about Pitt's defense and Louisville's offense, and it ended up that, you know, Pittsburgh found a way to grind out the win against the Cardinals. Well, it seems like this one is headed to that collision course of Notre Dame's offense and Pittsburgh's defense. And where's the challenge going to fall? Well, guys like Kyron Williams, Sebo Flemister, guys like that, they'll have to find ways to run the ball against Pittsburgh to take pressure off Ian Book, because, Mark, so far we haven't seen the Irish, the ability to stand in the pocket and sling it all over the place, right? That's not who Notre Dame's going to be this year, and that's okay. But this plays right into the matchup that Pat Narduzzi probably wants to see if his team can get back on the winning side. You know, you want to make this thing a brawl, then Notre Dame's offensive line and Pittsburgh's defensive front are probably happy to oblige there.
Brian Kelly in his press conference this week talked about that his desire was to get his team to be more balanced, have the ability to throw the ball downfield. He wants his opponents to watch tape and say, hey, you know what, we got to, yeah, we know about that offensive line, they would like to run it, but we also have to respect the fact that they can throw the ball. We really have not seen that from Ian Book and Notre Dame so far this season. And granted, they played four games all at home, and when you look at the numbers, and this time the numbers do not lie, Notre Dame has a grand total of 7 completions of 20 yards or more. 7 for the year. For the year. I mean, there's teams that give you 7 in a game. 7 for the year. That is the fewest of anybody in the Atlantic Coast Conference. I will bet you that if Brian Kelly was sitting here in the basement or hanging out with you down in Cartersville with Clifford D. Cat and Miss Vicky, and you put him on the truth serum, he would tell you, we've got to be better. We have to be better to get to that elite status to say, listen, We're going to look at Clemson. We're going to look at Alabama. We're going to look at Ohio State, or fill in the blank with whoever you think's that quality of team. And if we're going to get to that point, we've got to be able to throw the ball downfield. It's just the way the game's played now. This is not 1955. Mm-hmm. So, again, it will be ones against ones in this game. And Pitt hasn't lost four straight since 07. It feels like a desperate time for the Panthers this week, Wes. After the 2 1-point losses, they had chances against Miami. They just couldn't punch it in the red zone. Notre Dame wasn't great in the red zone either Saturday, putting only 12 up on Louisville. So something's got to give here. Again, it's one of those kind of games that if you're Pittsburgh, it kind of feels like, hey, we're all in. Well, let's go and do it. And these two, by the way, have played incredibly tight, close games the last 8 to 10 times they've hooked up. We'll go through this later in the week in terms of the numbers and the breakdowns of how tight this has been in terms of one possession games. Pitt normally plays Notre Dame tough. I expect that to be the case again on Saturday with or without Kenny Pickett.
By the way, if you want to and take on all the interviews and features that we have on Packer and Durham, you can either see the show or you can subscribe to the podcast. It's a great way to digest the program. They come in very convenient, easy-to-operate one-hour blocks for each show day. So you can get Kyron Williams, and you can get Hendon Hooker, and coming up here, Baylen Specter of Clemson. All those are all available through the Packer and Durham podcast, where it's available on all the platforms where you normally get your normal podcast. You Stitcher, iTunes, whatever the case may be. Pack, you're on Stitcher, right? You got the Stitcher deal worked out?
I am not. I've told you this before. No. Doing a show every day for 3 hours in the afternoon, as soon as we say goodbye here at 10, I get working on the radio show. So I really don't find myself spending a whole lot of time on any podcast. In fact, I could tell you this year, I have never listened to a podcast. Not one.
And we're almost out of 2020.
Well, yeah. I'm being totally transparent. I am not a podcast guy because, quite frankly, I'm too busy.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Fan accounting coming up in about 15 minutes or so. But right now, we're going to bring on half of the Bruise Brothers down here in Tigertown. Wes, you've got the game coming up Saturday. Syracuse in Death Valley taking on the number one team in the country. Baylen Specter, outstanding linebacker for the Tigers, joins us. Baylen, first of all, congratulations on the quick start. We appreciate you getting up early with us. And happy belated birthday.
No problem. Thank you all for having me. And thank you for the birthday wish.
By the way, what'd you get? I mean, my daughter, who's a Clemson student, turns 22 today. I know you turned 22 yesterday. So what was the big gift yesterday?
I didn't really get anything. I think Coach V's got me a cake somewhere in his office that I got to go pick up. But that's about it.
Well, the good news is, if Venables has a cake, the good news is,
he
isn't going to eat it.
Venables is making cakes.
I think it was his wife. I don't think it was Coach V.
I was getting ready to say, Venables doesn't look like the cake making type, Baylen. You know what mean? He didn't strike me as the guy who'd have the flour and the mixing bowl and all that deal.
Yeah, he's got a personality outside of football. So,
All right, this game this past week, it's 73-7. All right. And so I'm sitting here at home watching the game, watching all the games, and Spires gets in there, your punter. He's out there tossing it around, and I'm thinking to myself, listen, the next time you get in one of those out of control games, I know this guy that's part of the Bruise Brothers, played a little quarterback in high school. And I know these defensive guys, hey, we saw a big boy touchdown with Pinckney score and all that stuff. At some point in time, if you get another one of those crazy scores, any chance we could see, who out there toss it a little bit? Has that crossed your mind at all?
I've thought about it. I'd have to propose that to Coach Sweeney. I think it would be really fun to get out there. They obviously have to shorten the playbook, give me a couple plays. We'll run, read options, some RPOs. But I think it would be fun. Maybe if we get into another game like that, Coach Sweeney might maybe next year, my last year or something, if we get into another game, he might put me out there.
All right, just a thought.
Hey, Baylen, I know you sneak over and tell the quarterback, since you're from Calhoun and he's from Cartersville in Northwest Georgia, I know you slip over there and tell the QB every once in a while, hey, look, man, I can sling this rock now if you need me to, right?
Yeah, I do a little bit in the locker room, some locker room talk. We played him in high school, and he knows the deal. I know the deal. That wasn't a good game for us. So
no,
I can't really say much.
No, I know. No. I know.
Yeah, something tells me 16. Something would tell me, Baylen, that 16 looks you right in the eye and goes, "You don't want none of this. You really don't want any of this."
He got us for two years in a row in high school, so I can't say much.
It's funny.
Yeah. Hey, when you talk about this football team to other people, and because you've been so, you know, ingrained in this process and everything that goes on that makes Clemson football successful, how do you differentiate one year to the next? And in a role like that, Mark and I were spending part of the first hour talking about, I know somewhere along the way last week when the game got sideways and you guys are off the field, it became about the second and third line guys performing and producing. Was that kind of a focus last week? Because it sure seemed like they wanted to get in the end zone when they had their opportunity. And then I recall Coach Sweeney saying some things about not being happy about backup production in previous weeks.
Yeah, I think it goes back to like fall camp and spring ball when we get new guys in, going back to the basics, game plan, not game plan stuff, but the basic football that we do week in and week out during spring and fall camp. And then guys are just hungry and ready to play. They want their opportunity to come out there and do the best they can do. Everyone's excited to play. I mean, even if you're not a starter, I mean, we don't expect a difference. And that's what Coach Sweeney's talking about. Like Wake Forest game, I know the offensive line, and they weren't too excited about what they did when they got out there because they didn't really move the ball that week or Citadel week. But they came out this week and performed well, and guys got in there and did their job. And it was exciting to see. I was excited to see the young guys get out there and perform and make some tackles.
Baylen, what's the biggest difference between Clemson defense this year and last? And don't answer the question by going, well, we got some freshman defensive linemen that have really changed the deal. But what's different in terms of the mindset and the approach of Clemson defense in 20 versus Clemson defense in 19?
I think preparation, I would say. I think the preparation this year is really big. It's been big for us. I know we have a bunch of guys come in, especially the back seven, before we even start meetings. We meet together. We're usually in there together watching film before practice every day. And then the D-line goes in after and meets as a group. So I think if you get people together and unify each other as a team and everybody's on the same page, even when we're not out there on the field, just hanging out inside the locker room, watching tape, things outside of football. And then when you get out on the football, you see that cohesiveness and everyone's playing together and communicating and on the same page. It's a little bit of everything. Last year we were a great group, obviously. We had a very special defense, and we do this year. But I think year in and year out, the standard doesn't change, and we just bring in guys, and we know guys got to step up and be ready to play.
I think, Baylen, leadership is such an interesting and tangible with football teams, but it almost seems automatic at Clemson. You know, there have been guys, whether it was the defensive front maybe earlier in your career, now it seems like you and Skalski, not only do you have the fun tag, the Bruce Brothers, but you guys seem to be the vocal leaders of this football team, especially on the field. Is it more collaborative off the field, or are you guys – feeling that that leadership factor off the field as well?
Yeah, we are. We're open for any questions. And if any of the young guys come to us, defensive line, we try to answer. And, I mean, know the game plan as well as the coaches, so we're able to answer those questions for people that have them. On the field, it's more of a cohesive type thing. It's not really one way or the other. Everyone does their job. Everyone comes in and says anything. I mean, even the D-line. Not just us. Some of the older guys and leaders on the D-line are out there communicating, doing a good job holding their group. So I would say it's definitely a cohesive type thing, and everyone's in this together to make each other and lead their groups.
Baylen, last year we saw the Surratt brothers go up against each other with North Carolina and Wake Forest playing. What's it like playing with your brother, especially since he's on the offensive side of the ball here? What's that been like?
It's good. I don't think he realizes he's only a freshman. I mean, he's a redshirt freshman, so he has a lot of years left, but I'm super excited and happy to see what he's been doing. He's making a great, he's making a lot of catches out there, and he may not seem like he's getting a bunch of playing time, but he's doing really good. I mean, I get excited. I'm waiting for his first touchdown. I thought he was going to have it actually last year, the Georgia Tech game, kind of a low ball from Chase Bryce, and he dropped it. But I'm excited, excited to see him keep going, keep doing what he's doing and making those catches, and eventually that touchdown will come.
How about a little brother-to-brother pass? What about a little brother-to-brother pass here? I'm just dreaming big here, the way you guys are blowing people out. And if Dabo's over there trying to get creative, and again, hey, I know those backup quarterbacks are hurt and all that stuff, and you got to find somebody else. But a little brother-to-brother action would be nice, right? I can see that happening.
We got to put that on Coach Swinney. I think it's going to happen sometime soon. We're going to be out there and make a connection. Maybe a little five-yard stop. Who knows?
Yeah.
It might be a little toss. That counts as a pass, too.
That's it.
So it's going to happen.
I'm going to mention that to Coach on Thursday's interview with him.
Good.
Yeah, why don't you just continue to – why don't you continue to stir it up with, you know, poor Braylon. And Braylon's come on here. We're talking about Brannon. Their dad, Robbie, was a wide receiver, and you're over here drawing plays for him.
Hey.
This has been
we're here to entertain, man. I don't hear anybody say no yet. Right? I haven't heard a no yet.
Hey, no, there's definitely not been a no. Baylen, growing up with your dad playing at Clemson in the late 80s and early 90s, was this always the destination for you? I mean, Coach Lamb does a marvelous job at Calhoun. He's a great coach. It's a great coaching legacy of the Lamb family in the state of Georgia. But was Clemson kind of always the spot for you? Was this where you wanted to be?
Yes, I'd say so. They were my first offer. I knew this is a place I wanted to be. Growing up, I was a little bit of a dog fan, being from Georgia, and had some family members that went there. But, yeah, once I started coming to games, realizing the atmosphere, running down the hill, just the culture here as I was getting older, coming to camps, yeah, this is where I knew I wanted to come. And then they were my first offer, and that sealed the deal.
By the way, how different is it without the 82,000 going nuts and – rubbing Coach Howard's rock and coming down the hill. I mean, it's got to be completely – it's always a surreal experience. But this year in particular, as a player, what is that like compared to years past?
I think our fans do a great job, honestly. When you're playing, even if there are 82,000 people out there or 20,000 people, you're playing ball, so you don't really notice it that much. But when you're off on the sideline, I think the fans do a great job with the 20,000 that we have. They're loud, especially Miami game. They were super loud. Virginia game, they were in there. I'm thankful to have the fan base that we have. I think they do a phenomenal job bringing the energy week in and week out. But, yeah, it's definitely different. 82,000, I mean, it's a different level. It gets super loud. I mean, some of the loudest games I've ever been in have been in Death Valley.
Well, I know you're excited about Saturday and playing at home, and I've heard this statement made about you guys play to your standard. This is about Clemson, not about who you're playing. Does that apply specifically on a Saturday where maybe Syracuse has struggled through most of this season?
For sure. Week in and week out, well, we preach it all day, every day. It's about us. We just control what we can control, get our game plan down, get back to the basics, do our fundamentals during the week, and really just focus in on that game plan and focus in on what Syracuse has to do for us. And then once we get that game plan down, become Thursday, Friday, we're ready to go.
By the way, Sweeney didn't have any problems. Since he won't let you be the quarterback yet, he had no problem with this Bruce Brothers thing. Do you got you and Skalski cool with that or not?
Yeah, I like it. I want it to stick. I think it's great.
Look at that right there.
Here's the picture. Yeah, I like it a lot. He made that up, and it stuck, and it's going to keep going, I think.
Yeah, we got to get that on some T-shirts and bumper stickers and start branding that bad boy, the Bruce Brothers, man. It'd be good to go.
Exactly.
Before we let you run, go ahead, Wes.
I was going to say, you play reckless, but Skalski seems to be at another level now. who calms who down in a situation like that?
A little bit of both. Skowski can get pretty fired up and get going. His emotions get to him sometimes. Same with me. If he tells I'm a little out of it, he'll on the sideline, he'll come to me and he'll say a couple things. And at the end of the day, it's just ball. We're out there playing football, and it's just like practice. Once you get into the game, you're like, oh, this is practice all over again. So at the end of the day, it's a little bit of both. I mean, Skowski's emotions get pretty high. He's very intense, super intense, all about his business. I mean, he's a great leader. I'm thankful to have him right beside me.
God, between you and Skowski and Venables on game day, those crazy eyes, man. Jeez. Watch out, man. Let the dogs loose. Here they go. Search and destroy.
Watch out for Venables.
Yep, that's
Venables. Watch can take out it for to Venables.
Venables is nuts.
Yeah.
I mean, there's times you just like, man, get out of his way. He's good to go. He's wound up, and let's let it rip. We
Jake,
do this
with Jake's.
Unless, of course, he's baking a cake. Unless he's baking a cake, back.
Yeah, right.
I was talking about Jake. Jake Venables brings the intensity too.
Yeah,
so, all of them.
Okay.
Yeah, all of them. All those linebackers are different
all
breed.
The Venables.
Yeah, all those linebackers. They got a different look to them, man. No question. We ask this to every student athlete, Baylen. During your run there at Clemson, the hardest class that you've had is what?
I think it was management accounting, that was the hardest class I've ever taken here. Accounting management, it was either one or the other, but it was one of the hardest. I think it's 2180. But it was one of the hardest classes I've ever taken. I was happy to get out of there.
Yep, I dropped it. I dropped accounting too. I couldn't handle it.
It was the second accounting. The first one was tough, but the second one was really hard.
Yeah, I've told this story on the air before. The only reason I stayed in accounting as long as I did is because the girl sitting beside me was so gorgeous, and we became buds. And as soon as I got my first test, there was 25 multiple choice questions, and I made a 16, which means I got 4 of 25 right. I knew I was going to drop the class, but at least I made a good friend for life. And we are still friends to this day. But I dropped accounting. I could not get out of that thing fast enough. So I'm with you on that.
That was a tough class. I was the same way. I was ready to get out of there, but I hung in there and got out and passed the class. But it was definitely the hardest class I've ever taken.
All right. Well, listen, go warm up that throwing arm. I'm going to start working on Dabo on Thursday. Get that into playbook in some shape, way, or form.
Let's do it. Let's get a connection to my brother.
There it is. I like it.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
More guests coming your way in the Power Hour. But Wes, as you pointed out, the perfect segue, it's all about the fans on Wednesday. Their 15 minutes of fame begin now because we have two lucky viewers / listeners where you can participate in accounting.
Yeah. Yeah. And some folks have voiced their opinion on our accounting this week. I like how we have both caught the fire of certain fan bases, Pack, for the movements we had or didn't have in the accounting, right? I mean, amazing, you know, Carolina people mad at me because they thought I moved them too far down. Florida State fans said I moved them too far up. Then I saw they were feisty with you because you didn't move Carolina down enough, and then Florida State fans wanted you to move them up more.
Well, Florida State.
Meanwhile, I'm happy to report we've made Virginia Tech fans happy.
Well, I mean, listen, Florida State, hey, it was a great win, and you got a bump because of it. But, hey, you've also got, you know, three L's. Yep. So, I mean, this is a body of work thing.
Yeah.
You know, this is subjective. You figure it out yourself, and you can make fun of us all you want. It's all good. But now the fans get to participate, yeah. Wes. So let's see what we got this week.
Yep. Josh Bird is first at jbird_48. Josh, welcome to the program. Here's Josh's 15. He goes Clemson, Notre Dame, Virginia Tech is top three. Middle, next three, Miami, North Carolina, NC State. 7, 8, and 9 is Wake Forest, Boston College, Georgia Tech. 10 through 15 is Pitt, Florida State, Louisville, Virginia, Duke, Syracuse. Pack, your thoughts.
Hokies at 3. I hear you. But I don't know if they can be at three yet, given what happened with North Carolina. But nevertheless, I think everybody's got the general premise of the top five or six. I think 7 through 11, everybody's kind of got that figured out in whatever order you want. And then the last three or four are all over the map. I mean, Louisville hadn't won a game yet. Syracuse has been a problem. Duke's 1-5. So again, I think everybody, for the most part, from what I've seen, has it kind of tiered right, but everybody's got it tweaked a little different, and that's what makes the world go round.
There you go. All right, next is at Rick Brogdon. Rick, welcome to the show. Congratulations. He's got Clemson, Notre Dame, Miami, top three. Then 4 through 10 is North Carolina, Virginia Tech, NC State, Boston College, Florida State, Wake Forest, and then Pittsburgh, and 11 through 16. Oh, boy, here we go. Virginia, Georgia Tech, Louisville, Duke. 15 is the Titanic, and 16 is Syracuse. Now, that's not nice. That's not nice at all.
You know, I will say this for Rick. I appreciate there being 16 on there because I've started that on mine this year, the Sweet 16. But the 16th has got to be the joke. It can't be in front of one of our beloved ACC members. So that would be my only critique with Rick is, hey, I appreciate the comedy and the joke, but let's make sure the Titanic is 16, not in front of Syracuse, right? Just saying. Just saying. Yep. You got to be true to the brand to some degree here. But I do appreciate the 16 spot.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.